It is Friday, January 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard, live in Washington. Coming up, a White House meeting over a bipartisan immigration plan takes an ugly turn.
But I cannot believe that in the history of the White House, in that Oval Office, any president has ever spoken the words that I personally heard our president speak yesterday. You've seen the comments in the press. I have not read one of them that's inaccurate. To no surprise, the president started tweeting this morning denying that he used those words. It is not true.
Raising health standards of a nation by building safer roads and the Dixie Chicks. You can't keep a good country girl down. It's all ahead. A reported comment from U.S. President Donald Trump has quickly spawned a wave of global outrage. The president stunned lawmakers Thursday when he reportedly referred to Haiti and African nations with an expletive, meaning dirty and impoverished. The comment came during a White House meeting on immigration. Mr. Trump said the United States should let in more people from places such as Norway, whose prime minister met with him in the White House on Wednesday. Mr. Trump took to Twitter on Friday, denying using the vulgarity. Quote, "The language used by me at the DACA meeting was tough, but this was not the language used. What was really tough was the outlandish proposal made," Mr. Trump said in his tweet. And in another Twitter post, the president wrote that he had never said anything derogatory about Haitians, other than Haiti is obviously a very troubled and poor country. The president said he has a wonderful relationship with Haitians and suggested future meetings probably should be recorded. However, on Friday, Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin told reporters that the profane term was exactly the word used.
But I cannot believe that in the history of the White House, in that Oval Office, any president has ever spoken the words that I personally heard our president speak yesterday. You've seen the comments in the press. I have not read one of them that's inaccurate. To no surprise, the president started tweeting this morning denying that he used those words. It is not true. He said these hate-filled things, and he said them repeatedly.
The United Nations Human Rights Office on Friday spoke about Mr. Trump's remarks. Spokesman Rupert Colville said that these were shocking and shameful comments coming from the president of the United States.
This isn't just a story about vulgar language. It's about opening the door to humanity's worst side. It's about validating and encouraging racism and xenophobia that will potentially disrupt and even destroy the lives of many people. And that's perhaps the single most damaging and dangerous consequence of this type of comment by a major political figure.
The African Union, meanwhile, said it was frankly alarmed by the president's reported statement. AU spokesperson Ebba Colano told the Associated Press, given the historical reality of how many Africans arrived in the United States as slaves, this statement flies in the face of all accepted behavior and practice. A Daily Maverick, a South African media outlet, said, quote, "Casual Friday at the White House is soon to include hoods and tiki torches at this rate." Haiti has reportedly summoned a U.S. official to explain the president's remarks, and former Mexican President Vicente Fox said on Twitter, quote, "Your mouth is the foulest expletive in the world. America's greatness is built on the diversity, or have you forgotten your immigrant background, Donald?" Well, joining us now here is VOA senior national correspondent to help us understand and make a little bit of sense of this. Jim, we are in the midst of a ongoing and confusing national debate about immigration reform. How might these comments, do you think, sort of roil or change the composition of those talks?
I think the initial sense you get here rhetorically is that someone rolled a grenade into a room here. I mean, look, there is a deadline looming here that has to do with our budget. They want to try to get this done by a week from now, because on the issue of immigration, they actually do need bipartisan cooperation. And a lot of things were set in motion this week. If you go back to Tuesday, there was this extraordinary meeting at the White House. The president looked like he was engaged. He was soliciting all sides. The meeting was illustrative of the differences. It was televised for like 50 minutes. It was an extraordinary event. But here we go, as we've seen so often with the administration. Something happens behind closed doors where a different side of the president is revealed. We should note, you played the comments from Senator Durbin. You have the tweet from the president basically saying he didn't say that. We've heard nothing else from anybody in the room, one way or the other.
Right.
And no one is challenging Senator Durbin's account at this point.
Does this, do you think, derail hope for some kind of compromise on immigration reform?
It would seem at the very outset here to complicate things quite a bit. But what we see with immigration, it's been going on for years, Doug, is that this meeting that occurred at the White House on Thursday was prompted by a bipartisan group that's been working on the issue for a long time. But we have to understand in Washington terms is there are so many groups with an in on immigration. And this includes folks on the hard right who are very leery of any kind of compromises that would weaken, you know, their efforts to kind of limit immigration. And there's actually, and we saw this on the Tuesday meeting, there are conservatives who are leery of the president that he might give away too much.
Right.
And so they were quick to weigh in once this bipartisan proposal came forward. And as we saw, that's what the president was asking about during the meeting and led to this incredible hubbub.
It sounds like you're painting a picture of a very fractured political landscape. But this is, of course, an issue that figured high, maybe at the highest level in Mr. Trump's presidential campaign. I know you're, you know, this is looking ahead and this is speculative. It's only January, but do you think this might also in some way figure into how the midterm elections play out?
Well, this kind of rhetoric has hurt the president before. We see people with a lot of confidence in the U.S. economy right now in the polling data that is not transferring to his popularity. And a lot of that seems to be his personal style, which many voters find offensive. This kind of remark will clearly play into that. And the other issue we've seen is based on election results in 2017. Democrats are very energized. It's this kind of rhetoric that energizes them even more and becomes a problem for Republicans as they seek to protect their majorities in November.
Well, if nothing else, it's been interesting noting how all the major media outlets have been responding to try to address and speak to these comments. Jim Malone, thank you so much.
You bet.
VOA Senior National Correspondent Jim Malone. Here are some of the top stories that we're following at VOA at this hour. Anti-migrant incumbent is favored in a Czech presidential vote. Turkey is telling its citizens to reconsider travel to the U.S. A transit shutdown in Greece is as unions are striking for the right to strike, and IS leaflets threatening residents in a restive Afghan province. Much more expanded coverage of these stories and more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Before you have your doctor-ordered cholesterol blood test, you usually have to fast. That means you can't consume anything but water for 9 to 12 hours prior. Nearly a half day of not eating can be a bit of a challenge for some people. A new study by researchers at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine provides more evidence that a method to calculate LDL levels or bad cholesterol, developed in 2013, is more accurate and could eliminate the need for the pre-test fasting period. The new calculation method was devised by Seth Martin and his colleagues at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. A number of studies conducted around the world by other researchers have also confirmed the method's greater accuracy, and it has been accepted for use by at least one major diagnostic company. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Live from Washington, this is International Edition, coming to you from the Voice of America. I'm Doug Bernard. Debates about immigration are roiling more than just Washington, D.C., as we just heard. Police and immigrant rights protesters clashed Thursday outside 26 Federal Plaza, that's New York City's immigration court, after word spread that Ravi Ragbir, an activist known to protect immigrant families from deportation, had himself been detained by immigration authorities inside the building. VOA's Ramon Taylor was there and has this report.
Ravi Ragbir, a well-known immigrant rights activist and immigrant from Trinidad, was detained in New York on Thursday during a routine check-in with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Some supporters, who were already gathered outside the building for a scheduled prayer march and vigil against deportation, confronted a departing ambulance after word spread that Ragbir had passed out and was being sent to a hospital. That resulted in multiple arrests, including two city councilmen.
Give us strength, give us courage.
Others joined hands and prayed, led by Reverend Donna Scopper, senior minister of Judson Memorial Church, who spoke to VOA after the incident.
Amen. When ICE does things that are just beyond understanding, when they had other choices, they only make us stronger. They need to understand that.
Ragbir, an immigrant from Trinidad, has faced the threat of deportation since he was convicted of wire fraud 16 years ago. Following removal proceedings in 2006, he spent nearly 2 years in immigration detention before his release in February 2008, a period during which he became a rising voice for the country's immigrant community.
A pillar of this community.
Until his detention, Ragbir had an administrative stay of removal in place. His lawyers say they have already filed a lawsuit.
We came into the check-in with the hope that they would allow him to continue checking in as he has for many years, complying with all of the rules that have been required of him.
That's Alina Das, one of Ragbir's attorneys, who was present with him in the meeting.
So we continue to pursue our options, the legal challenges, to see that he will hopefully be freed soon and back with his wife and with the community that loves him.
At the time this report was published, ICE had not responded to VOA's request for comment regarding Ragbir's arrest. Demonstrations surrounding his case followed the detention of Jean Monterville, another immigrant activist from Haiti, who was taken into custody last week near his Far Rockaway New York home, and just one day after AP reported a wave of ICE raids at convenience stores across the country. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
Deadly traffic accidents are more than just individual tragedies. They're a drag on economic growth in developing countries, at least according to a new World Bank report. The study is among the first to show that investing in road safety in low- and middle-income countries would actually raise national incomes. VOA's Steve Barragona has the story.
Traffic accidents are a top 10 cause of death worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. 90% happen in the developing world. But the issue does not get much attention, says World Bank transportation expert Dipen Bose.
There is not a lot of political will in many low- and middle-income countries to take definitive actions to reduce road deaths and injuries.
The study Bose co-authored focused on five countries: China, India, Thailand, the Philippines, and Tanzania. It used mathematical models to estimate what each country's economy would gain from safer roads over a 24-year period.
So the results were quite startling.
Thailand would see a 22% boost to national income by cutting traffic deaths in half. The country's high rates of both economic growth and traffic accidents meant it had the most to gain. Tanzania would gain 7%. The other countries fell in between. These kinds of economic gains are something no national government can ignore, Bose said.
It gives kind of the economic story of why it is important to take strong actions on road safety.
The report says enforcing speed limits, helmet and seatbelt laws, and cutting down on drunk driving are low-hanging fruit. But drivers are only partly responsible for traffic deaths, says road safety expert Anna Bray Sharpen at the World Resources Institute.
If the system's not safe, if people don't have the opportunity to cross the road safely or drive in a safe vehicle, then a small error can result in a fatality, and that should not be the case.
Bray Sharpen co-authored a separate report that says city planners and government officials are responsible for building safety into the transportation system. That often does not happen, she says.
So, for example, many cities have applied highway design guidelines even to their city streets, which basically are designed to facilitate maximum traffic flow and speed.
But they are not designed for bikers or pedestrians, she adds.
People tend to take risks to try and cross the road. And that comes back to this issue of whether this is a question of personal responsibility or a co-responsibility between governments and planners and people using the road.
The report offers guidance on how to incorporate safety into road design. It's timely, Bray Sharpen adds, because many developing countries are currently planning major road infrastructure projects.
Basically, there's a window of opportunity now to integrate safety into that planning, which is much more cost-effective than trying to retrofit safe elements of design into the system later on.
And these roads will be around for decades, she added. If they're not built safely, they will be taking a toll for a long time to come. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
And you are listening to the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
Live from Washington, you're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard. After being banned by country radio for their criticisms of President George W. Bush and the Iraq War in 2003, the Dixie Chicks are back, and with a huge surprise. Sarah Williams sat down with VOA's Nikki Strong to learn more.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, that.
We'll have that. We'll work on getting that report for you in just a short moment. In the meantime, the robot revolution has arrived at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas this week. That's the annual celebration of new electronic gadgets and gizmos as they are unveiled for new audiences. VOA's Elizabeth Lee is there and has more.
Robots of all shapes and sizes from around the world have taken over the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. They interact with people, and some even talk.
Anybody wants to cuddle me.
This one even has a big ego from winning too many games of the word game Scrabble.
Here's a sharpener for you. Keep your mind sharp.
This is like a humanoid. It's good for maybe elderly, for children, actually for adults to have interaction.
Most of these robots have cameras that act as eyes. For those concerned about someone hacking into a robot to peep into your home, there are safeguards. For this robot called Buddy,
when the camera is activated, we will show it on the screen and with a light, specific light, to know that someone is using your camera.
Several different companies will have social robots available for consumers this year. The makers of Buddy say 2018 is the year that people will adopt a social robot in their home.
This kind of robot is the next step because Amazon Echo, Google Home can't move. They are not alive. It's not a character, you know. So it's the next step. So I think this robot, I hope it will be Buddy, but this kind of robot will be adopted by everybody in the next few years.
What do these convention goers think of welcoming a robot into the family?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it really depends on what you would use it for, you know, and what it would do for you.
This surely looks nice over here.
I think today people, they don't have time to spend time with elderly people or with children.
And using that, it's just perfect because it looks like a human, interact like a human, and it's a gentle product.
The costs of companion robots vary.
I am scared.
For Buddy, it's around $1,500.
If you're going to spend $1,000 on an iPhone, you can spend $1,000 on a little robot like that.
Just like a dog or a cat, a robot companion may become a regular part of many families in the not-so-distant future. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Las Vegas.
I don't know where she got that music from, but there you go. Well, that is our show for today and International Edition for you this week. Thanks so much for being with us. We always appreciate your joining us. Please visit our website at voanews.com for all the latest news and information from around the world. From Washington and for the whole crew here in D.C., Studio 52, I'm Doug Bernard. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Religious freedom is an internationally acknowledged human right, recognized as such in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the United Nations International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Helsinki Accords, and many covenants and declarations. The promotion of religious freedom is a central element of the United States foreign policy. Countries that protect freedom of religion are more stable, economically successful, and peaceful. Nonetheless, in far too many places around the globe, people continue to be persecuted, unjustly prosecuted, or imprisoned for exercising their right to freedom of religion or belief. Today, a number of governments infringe upon individuals' ability to adopt, change, or renounce their religion or belief, worship in accordance with their religion or beliefs, or be free from coercion to practice a particular religion or belief, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. In accordance with the International Religious Freedom Act of 1998, the Secretary of State annually designates governments that have engaged in or tolerated systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom as countries of particular concern. At the end of December, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson redesignated Burma, China, Eritrea, Iran, North Korea, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan as countries of particular concern for having engaged in or tolerated particularly severe violations of religious freedom. The Secretary also placed Pakistan on a special watch list for severe violations of religious freedom. From the beginning, America has been a place that has cherished the freedom of worship. Sadly, many around the globe do not enjoy this freedom, said President Donald Trump. We pray for the strength and wisdom to achieve a better tomorrow, one where good people of all faiths, Christians and Muslims and Jewish and Hindu, can follow their hearts and worship according to their conscience.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Here's a quick quiz. What do the letters LTATOMLAW stand for? We know the answer, right? Listen to Akwe Thompson on Nightline Africa Weekends. Add to that 16 and 18 UTC on VOA, and we have a perfect score. That was easy.